This is the January 19 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Elaine Cubb of ElaineCubb.com out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, Greg Ginder, too, from FC Stone in Chesterfield, Missouri, and Kim Holzapfel of TGM in Effingham, Illinois, should join us a bit later in the program. Let's begin our conversation, Elaine and Greg, by getting a rough sketch of where you think we are in the commodity markets at this point as we begin to think about the inauguration of a new president and the harvest of a brand new crop in South America. Elaine Cubb, where do we stand for corn and soybeans?
Well, it's two different answers. I mean, these markets have very different outlooks or very different sort of attitudes right now. And I think it's really due to what you just mentioned is South America. What's the weather forecast there? What's the fear? I think the problem is for the market, and what makes it really difficult to trade right now is the uncertainty about flooding. And flooding will always be a difficult thing to trade. But I think it's really hard for the market to really get a great idea of how bullish it should be about the recent wet weather in Argentina. And yet the market seems to have added some risk premium, found a price it likes, and it's not moving from there, at least in the last couple of days.
So we've added, what, maybe 80 cents or something along those lines, probably mostly?
Almost 90 in the nearby.
Yeah, mostly because of the flooding in Argentina, although that's done now. Dry weather is beginning to move
right
in, and no expectation really for a lot more rainfall there. Do you think that's enough for the long haul if this season pattern doesn't change and they don't have any more adverse weather?
Well, like I said, so flooding is difficult. It's not just like a little bit of excess rain. If you've lost acres, lost topsoil, lost seedlings, then that's damage that doesn't get turned around by a slightly different weather forecast in the 6 to 10 day. On the other hand, that dry forecast coming up for Argentina, it will help dry out some of the wet places, but there are also dry spots, localized dry spots in Santa Fe province that will not be helped by the hot and dry forecast. So a bullish case can be made either way, or at least a neutral case, a case to maintain this price level 1070 or above.
Weighing on that, I would think, Greg Ginder, is the crop that is just north of Argentina, where in Mato Grosso they have begun to harvest. Looks like they will be having an excellent harvest in a large part of Brazil. There are some tougher areas. USDA last week upped the ante, saying 104 million metric tons of soybeans from there in total. Has that changed very much? And does it matter what's happening in Argentina if there's that big of a crop in Brazil?
Oh, I think it certainly matters on what's going on in Argentina. But yeah, the early reports on the early harvest in Brazil has been very good. Some very good production seen there. The Argentina thing definitely has an effect on the market. And like Elaine mentioned, it is very difficult to tell, you know, on the flooding side of things. You know, you do have some instant loss. You have, you know, areas that are going to have some loss, and you have some areas that are going to have, you know, little loss. So, I mean, it's one of those market movers that has a tendency to be here today and gone tomorrow. But as far as price goes, it's interesting to me that most of the chart guys and the technical guys would say 1075 or a close above that would be bullish enough to add another leg to $11. The trade has traded above that, but it has not closed above it. 1075 yesterday was the close, and I would like to see a close above 1076 to see this thing actually add some technical support to the idea that $11 is the next mark of sales.
On the note of sales, you're close to the river there in St. Louis. Has there been support out of the export market this week? Have things changed very much as it relates to basis?
Oh, certainly. We have seen quite a bit of activity towards the end of last week and the beginning of this week. So much to say that the farmer probably in just the localized St. Louis area and surrounding areas is probably somewhere to 60 or 80% sold on their crop for soybeans, considerably less on corn, which is a little bit harder to gauge, but certainly less than half the corn has moved in this market rally that we've had. So to say basis has moved is an understatement. Today, soybean basis was off about a dime on the nearby January delivery, and corn was off about eight. So part of that has to do with barge freight. January typically in the St. Louis market is a very heavy delivery season. You get a lot of requests for barges, and as those buyers come in to buy barges, the price typically does go up. So that does have an effect on the basis levels. So we are seeing, along with the improved farmer selling, the basis has also has weakened up some.
This would be fairly normal as farmers find a price that they like to sell. They dump into the marketplace. The marketplace widens out the basis just a bit. Is what you're seeing here just typical of that, or is it indicative of a change from North America to South America supplies, which would be early at this point?
Yeah, it would be a little early for that assumption, but it's not completely out of the seasonal aspect of what we see generally. We normally see a lot of the beans move in the January slot. A lot of times you see quick ship bids to fill in different pipelines, different delivery periods. So, yeah, we certainly see a lot of a lot of grain movement this time of year, and along with that goes higher transportation costs because of the increased volume.
I think, Elaine Cubb, that it's safe to say not only in the St. Louis area, but in a large part of Illinois, most farmers will have sold more beans at this point out of their own ownership than would typically be the case. Is that true of the Western Corn Belt producer as it relates to soybean sales?
Yeah, I was going to build on what Greg said there, that I think your sort of Midwestern processor level bids, or certainly out in the Western Corn Belt, Iowa, Nebraska soybean processor bids, those have also backed off in the past week, but maybe more like a nickel rather than a dime. But nevertheless, it's probably an indication that movement is happening. And the prices are certainly more attractive of the soybeans versus the corn. But I think when you look at the prospects of these two different markets, what can you really expect it to do in the next few weeks or the next month or so? I almost feel like there's more of a bullish case to hold out hope and to hold on to soybeans rather than for corn. The volatility and the implied volatility in the corn options is quite low. It's unusually low for this time of year. And if you look at what that implies from a statistical standpoint, you know, there's a chance that we might see nearby corn go to $4 in the next month, but it's a slight chance, and it could very easily go the other way. And if you look at the sideways sort of range-bound direction of the corn market, that does seem to be the most likely expectation, is that we could actually end up seeing cash corn back below $3, and soybeans could theoretically keep on going up. So I think the urgency is to get rid of the corn, if you ask me, but I doubt that's what's really been happening, which I think is what you asked.
I think that is what I'm asking. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of urgency on the part of producers to eliminate any of their inventory of corn. They have been willing sellers of soybeans. How do you view this? And do you think producers really should think about moving corn, Greg?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the price, just to give an idea, the St. Louis price, even with the basis break today, we're still looking at, you know, the 370, 375 area. And that's still, I really think, a good level. Could it get better? I certainly think that there's a possibility there. But to try to, you know, hit the bullseye with everything, I think would be a little bit risky. you know, the basis levels right now in St. Louis are really good. I mean, we're talking 10 and 15 over, maybe even more than that in some of the river locations and even in the ethanol plants. But there is a lot of offers that we have sitting around the 375 board level. So if we were to put a dime on this front end future, we would see a pretty good wave of sellers. I don't know how much would be behind that, but there certainly is a great deal of interest at the 375 futures level.
And are you okay with that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's obviously not $4, but you know, the storage is going to keep ticking on these guys. They're into the per month now, and we're seeing a lot of interest in the, just in the pricing of storage and DP bushels, just to prevent, you know, another 3, 4, 5 cents, whatever it may be, that comes off on the monthlies. But I think, you know, this corn market, I think, as far as a marketing plan, is going to be a game of averages. So I think starting at anywhere the 370, 375 level is, you know, is a good start.
And where would you think it might end? Or where would you hope that you think you might? It might be a better way to put it.
Well, okay. I guess my hope is that we have an opportunity to sell a future with a four handle on it. And there's a few things that we kind of need to a few dominoes that need to fall our way to get that. One of them would be, you know, the acreage. If it is true that there will be an increase in bean acreage, anywhere from 3 to 5 million here in the U.S., you know, that would put pressure on the bean market. That would add support to the corn market. You know, if we continue to do sales that we've seen that are at or better than what we have been doing, that would certainly help. If the ethanol demand continues at its current pace or slightly better, I think that would also help. We have a very large balance sheet that we have to chew through as far as ending stocks. I think that's the overhead pressure. So I don't put my sights incredibly high, but I do believe that if we get an opportunity to sell $4 cash, you know, whether it be against pricings or whether it be against new deliveries off the farm, I think that's something that has to be looked at very seriously. And anywhere between that 375, 380, 390, $4 area, I think those are all good sales given everything that we're looking at.
It's really about ending stocks, I suppose, or normally is. So we have 2.35 billion bushels for corn, 420 million bushels for soybeans. Wheat ending stocks are 1.1, almost 1.2 billion bushels. These numbers are all really big, Elaine, and I suppose they seem to put a lid on the movement of the marketplace. However, the price of soybeans has remained strong, and nobody really has a good idea why it is that when the United States has a supply sitting there of 420 million bushels, that soybeans can approach $10 in price, even on the cash market.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the expectation was that could certainly get trimmed in future reports, and that it will carry over into your 2017 ending stocks levels in a way that could certainly be less than the 10% stocks to use ratio, especially if we gain additional export business due to weakness or in supply from Argentina and or Brazil. I mean, it's not over down there yet. It certainly could carry into 2017 where you have a scenario of less than 300 million bushels as an ending stocks number. It could happen. And I think that's the sort of forward-looking thing that the futures markets are looking at this point.
What are the items that you're watching of real interest to you, Elaine?
Well, I think the thing that puzzles me right now, and sticking just with the nearby and not really looking too far into the planting expectations, but in the nearby scenario where you have nearby soybean futures at a 2.93 to 1 price ratio against nearby corn futures, that's very unusual. But there's really only two ways that those two markets or that those two prices interact. And one is through the planting intentions. So when we go into spring planting, probably soybeans will urge farmers to plant relatively more soybeans than corn and certainly to pick up some of the lost winter wheat acres. But if we have dry spring weather, farmers may continue to plant corn. That's certainly an open question. But I think My curiosity is more in the near term. How do we get the nearby futures to snap back into a normal price ratio? And that's really only done through the feed markets. You've got corn working out to effectively $118 per ton in the cash market and soybean meal at $350. Now, it's not that easy for the feed rations to be moved around, but at some point, logically, you'd expect to see more of the usage going into the corn that would match some of the more optimistic, bullishly optimistic expectations, even from the USDA, for corn to get moved into animal feed.
That would be interesting. Are you worried at all that there will be a movement to crush more beans and bean meal will be cheaply priced, leaving corn out of that mix more than it has been?
I think there's absolutely an opportunity here for soybean meal to get cheaper. I mean, I think this almost looks like a selling opportunity, but it really sort of depends on a lot of outside movements, obviously.
So you're watching then the quarterly grain stocks reports very closely. What did you think of the last one? And then the June report can be, and I'll use the term that's officially used upstairs in Mumford Hall from the Agricultural Economist, pretty wonky.
Wonky. Nice. The thing that really stuck out to me on the quarterly grain stocks report was how much of the corn, especially, and we've talked about this already on the show, of farmers, you know, holding on to this corn despite not a lot of great expectations for future prices. But a large proportion of that is on farm, right? 7.6 billion bushels stored on farm. That's up 11% from last year, which means I think not only that farmers have been building bins, but I think it shows an increased willingness to use piles or bags, however you can store it, so that you're storing it on your own farm and hopefully not paying that 5 cents a bushel DP charge. You're still paying something, but you're not sitting down and writing a check about it. You're not going to see that price coming off your take-home pay.
And just so everybody's clear as to where corn is from USDA's grain stocks, 12.383 billion bushels were on hand still as of December the 1st. That's when the stocks number is figured. On farm storage was at 7.6 billion at that point, off farm at 4.7. Just for reference, soybeans were at 1.3 on farm and 1.5 off farm, total in house at 2.85 billion or thereabouts. So, Greg, just bring me back around and kind of give me an idea of what producers in your mind should be thinking about as it relates to corn sales for new crop.
Sure. To add another different perspective on the meal, like Elaine mentioned, one of the things that we're looking at is the effect that palm oil and bean oil has had on the soy markets. And one of the effects has been that because of the increased demand on bean oil, you're starting to see more crush. You're starting to see meal start to work into markets that generally before it was overpriced for. And it, as it was 2 years ago, where bean meal was the driving factor in the bean market, now it has turned out that bean oil has become the driving factor, in which case bean meal has kind of become a secondary product, where it, as before, was the primary product. So as she mentioned before, we are also looking for bean meal to continue to get weaker as far as the cash basis. Most of the end users that we're seeing are starting to go more hand to mouth just to buy what they need to get through the current current quarter or the current month, and then they're looking forward as the potential gets to cheaper meal prices. But to your question about corn, the new crop corn, we've seen some activity in the sales of new crop corn. We got up really close to $4 futures level on new corn, and it, not a whole lot of activity there. More questions, more attention that was being paid to it. And you know, I certainly think that given the balance sheet that we're looking at and the stocks on hand that we have, the corn market, I don't believe, has as much volatility as the bean market does, given all the outside effects that is affecting the bean market. Now, that could change at any point in time. If somewhere in the world a corn crop has a tendency, you know, the Safrina Brazil crop, if there's a problem with that, you know, that would be a driving factor or an underlying support for the corn market. So we certainly look at, we are certainly looking at, you know, stepping into some new crop sales with that four handle on the front of it. Obviously the board plus or minus basis would probably be less than $4. But we are looking at locking in, you know, $4 futures with the opportunity to maybe see basis get, instead of say 25 under it in local markets, to maybe a 15 under, in which case 385 corn would look like a pretty good sale if it was made, you know, last year for this time. So that's kind of the avenue that most people are looking at right now.
Let me see if I can summarize where I think we've gone through today. And I will start in August of last year. You two can help me out to see whether I've actually gotten there correctly. So at that point, one of the things that was driving the soybean market higher, and there was really, I guess, the one in August and one from prior to that, the first one, a less than stellar crop out of South America, began to drive exports to the United States much more quickly, most of those going, of course, to China. The El Nino, which we thought would have an impact on the size of the crop in the United States, did not develop here. However, it did develop in Indonesia last summer. That created some very dry conditions for palm oil production, and that moved into the soybean oil market, adding additional fuel to the move up in soybeans potentially at that point, along with the exports. Volatility remains in the soybean market at this time because we are now in the middle of a weather market in South America. And on the flip side, corn, which is primarily grown and exported only out of the United States, at least as a much bigger crop than anywhere else in the world, is a very low volatility now, with expectations because of that on both of your parts that movement in that particular commodity market won't be very high, which leaves me with wheat, and I can only say burdensome supplies there. Did I get most of that right, Elaine?
I agree with all of that. I will make a subtle adjustment to your wheat statement, that the spring wheat market is actually quite hot right now. We're seeing an inverse there, obviously, which is, I mean, it's not only a supply story, and it's really more of a demand story, which is kind of an odd scenario. But generally speaking, and particularly for your listeners in Illinois, your Chicago soft wheat prices are nothing to write home about, and it is definitely a scenario of burdensome supply.
Final words from each of you, I think, at this point. And Elaine, I'll let you start.
Well, I liked Greg's idea of getting started on 2017 sales if you see a $4 handle on the corn price, the December corn price. And I will just point out that we are within a dime of seeing that. So this is not too early to start thinking about that. And remind yourself how much better it will be to have pre-harvest hedging done rather than paying 5 cents a month in storage next January.
Elaine Cubb is with ElaineCubb.com. She's out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. Greg Ginder is with FC Stone out of their Chesterfield, Missouri office. Greg?
You know, to kind of touch base on the beans again, that seems to be everybody's talk. We didn't really touch on new crop soybeans. Looking at about a 1035 future here in the last couple days for the high. Not to say that is any great price to write home about, but we have had a lot of interest in that given the potential for increased bean acres. So that's one that's definitely one thing that we are also keeping our eye on. But here in the near term, at least for the rest of the week, or actually tomorrow and next week, if we close this March future above 1076, the most of the technicians would say that we are probably headed, if not to, but near $11 on on the near crop bean future. So keep your eyes open for that, and hopefully we see that here in the next couple trading days.
That's Greg Ginder. He's with FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri, also along with us on this edition of Commodity Week. Elaine Cubb from Elkhorn, Nebraska. We're now joined by Kim Holzapfel. He's been traveling with me this week, for at least on Thursday, on the Farm Credit Illinois Crop Insurance Winter Meeting Season Series, talking a little bit about his area, TGM, and the country elevators that service a good portion of southern Illinois, kind of along this I-70 corridor. How many country elevators and capacity is there in the TGM system?
We have 35 country grain locations, storage capacity of about 40 million bushel, and we run about 80 million bushel volume through the 40 million bushel of storage.
One of the things I found of interest that you've been talking to those at the meetings about, lack of bushels of beans that farmers actually still have in their hands in your system, what does that look like today?
Well, I mean, the producers have did a fairly decent job of selling beans this year. Obviously, they sold a little bit early in some cases, but we had the rally above $10 earlier, dip back down, come back above $10. So we're sitting with about roughly half as many beans in storage today that we had a year ago today. Historically, we're on the low end of things as far as the producers go. As far as hedge grain, the company's carrying a fairly large amount of hedge grain, but the producers don't have the ownership right now.
How do things change for you once we move into a new calendar year and producers really have moved a lot of grain? That usually I would think would be corn, but maybe some soybeans. Do things change seasonally for you in terms of how grain is moving through the system?
Yeah, I mean, and that's changed in the last several years since South America's come into the bean growing substantially in the last few years, but we have to move our beans early this anymore because of the river system. The export program comes to the U.S. in September, October, November, December. We know that it's going to be leaving in February when the South American crop comes in, so we have to concentrate very heavily on moving beans in the early part of our marketing season, and typically we're rolling the corn out then after the beans get shipped, but we do have to concentrate heavily on beans in the early part of the marketing season.
Over your years as a grain merchandiser, this change has probably not changed the way soybeans really are marketed by producers. I would think they generally market across the scale or pretty close thereafter anyway. However, has it changed the basis levels at the fall time frame very much?
Yeah, that's really what I'm talking about. It seems like the basis is firmed up. We typically are getting better basis levels in the October, November, December time frame because of the export program. And where we're located in Illinois, tributary to the river system, and we do load CN rail car or trains down to New Orleans, we know the export program is going to leave. So the basis levels are good early. Producers have picked up on that over the last several years and have merchandised their grain accordingly, knowing that if they hang on to the summer, we're basically into a processor market at that point in time. So, you know, right now we still have the processors using grain, but we know the river is going to disappear on us and does every year about February.
Because the equipment in the system is busy moving soybeans, has that changed corn and the way it's exported through the system over the years?
Yeah, it really has. You know, corn used to be, you know, we moved it 12 months out of the year. Because we have to concentrate on the beans, getting the beans out so early anymore, we've had to push the corn back to later periods, and it's actually helped the corn basis out in our geographic area because, you know, we've got to hang on to corn. We simply can't move corn when we're trying to move beans out. So the commercial grain companies are actually holding on to corn just a little bit longer, trying to move the beans out early, and therefore, it's affected the basis. It's improved the basis in the early part of the season and stretched it out, you know, maybe weakened the basis up then once we get into the later parts of the summer when we know the grain's got to move.
Yeah, and then in the winter months, do you see a switch there in late February to March that your bases are better than they used to have been because you haven't been moving so much corn through the system and consequently also you don't usually get too much of an ice problem this deep into the Illinois and Mississippi River system, but there is some problems further north of you.
Yeah, when the mid-Mississippi shuts down, the Illinois River's obviously a big funnel for grain coming down, but when it does get cold, the Illinois freezes up. St. Louis market is really good. But, January, February, March time frame is when we really start making heavy sales of cash grain into the St. Louis market. The ethanol plants have to have grain 365 days a year. So that market's a little more consistent. And obviously, we have the livestock needs, and they're more of a day-to-day type deal also. But as far as the shipments go into the St. Louis area especially, we hit them real hard in January, February, and March. The processors then come along in our part of the country, April, May, June, July. We also hit the poultry market very, very heavily. They have their local corn down in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, and that doesn't get used up typically until about the first of the year. So we do see better basis levels then going on the trains going down into the poultry market in the January, February time frames.
Terminals appear to be being built along the Illinois and Mississippi River, especially in the St. Louis area. Why is that capacity coming into play now?
Well, I think people are becoming concerned about the lock and dam system in the state of Illinois or on the Mississippi River. And if anything would ever, happen to the lock and dam system, once you get to St. Louis and south, there is no lock and dams on the Mississippi River. So they're building the grain terminals south of the lock and dam system. So there will be no disruption of export grain, and we are able to start moving rail grain more freely into that St. Louis market south of the lock and dam system. So I think the major grain companies are just trying to get some assets south of the lock and dam system just in case something were to happen.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online. Thanks to our panelists today, including Elaine Cubb of ElaineCubb.com out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, Greg Ginder from FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri, and Kim Holzapfel. He's with TGM out of Effingham, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.